flurries of fun await this winter in Indiana. Feel the rush of the Midwest's only refrigerated toboggan run. Ski down snow-covered slopes and marvel at frozen waterfalls on a winter hike. When it's time to unwind, from outdoor fun to indoor escapes, your perfect winter getaway starts in Indiana. Plan your trip today at inindiana.com/winter.
Hey guys, it's Jim Costa from Cash the Ticket. If you're betting the NFL playoffs, you need to be listening to Cash the Ticket. We're breaking down every single game, totals and sides, all the way to the big game. Subscribe to Cash the Ticket on the Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
This is the Sports Edge with Rick Wolf on your flagship station for New York sports. The Fan, Sports Radio 66 and 101.9 FM, WFAN New York.
Hi, everybody, and welcome to this week's edition of Rick Wolf's Sports Edge. I'm your host, Rick Wolf. Well, last week we had an open on-air experiment in which you, the listeners, could pick and choose the sports parenting topics you wanted to talk about. And I thought that experiment, that approach, worked pretty well. We had a bunch of great calls on a whole bunch of different topics. I mean, we covered everything from the new ruling from FINA regarding transgender swimmers. They must have completed their reassignment surgery by the age of 12 if they want to compete in the Olympics or in other international meets. We also talked about the Winter Olympics raising the age of competition for figure skaters to be 17 in 2024. Now, this was done to try and get away from all the incredible amount of stress, psychological stress, that's placed on young figure skaters. And personally, I think this was a very smart and very prudent move. But the topic that generated the most comments last week had to do with NIL, name, image, and likeness, and how this free-for-all to grab cash is going to affect the domain of college sports in ways we can't even imagine. And we can certainly pick up on that discussion about NIL again this morning, especially in light of the news this past week that USC and UCLA are jumping to the Big Ten. Now look, college sports these days, we know it's all about money and revenue. And apparently the Pac-12 is falling behind the Big Ten and the SEC when it comes to big TV contracts. And thus, the USC and UCLA, they're looking for bigger paydays. So adding two blue-chip colleges onto their schedule means the Big Ten will have even more power to, quite frankly, talk about NIL to their incoming recruits. And by the way, the Big Ten will now have 16 universities in its fold. I mean, the math doesn't really add up, but Big Ten, 16 colleges, whatever. It's just the way of the world. For better or for worse, the rich will get richer. And mind you, I have to tell you, to be candid, I'm a big fan of the University of Michigan since my youngest daughter graduated from there. But I think we can all assume that the super rich and super powerful Big Ten is going to figure out all sorts of intriguing, different, and quite lucrative NIL deals for their recruits. You know, one of the calls last week came in from Lou from Lindbrook, who's a college coach, and he said, you know, it used to be that the coaches interviewed the athlete. He laughed, and he said, now it's the other way around. It's the athlete recruit who grills the coach with questions like, well, how much is my scholarship for? Will I be a starter on the team my freshman year? And the new wrinkle in all this is, how much NIL money will I get? And that the money, of course, needs to be guaranteed, coach. I mean, it's as simple as that. Also in the headlines this past week, the United States Supreme Court decided that a longtime assistant high school football coach, who at the end of each game would go out to midfield and hold a sort of impromptu prayer session. Well, that the Supreme Court decided that coach was wrongfully removed from his high school coaching position at a public high school out in Washington State. Now, you might recall we talked about this this case a few weeks ago on the Sports Edge. It was a complicated case, but to me, the real world impact is the concern that a high school athlete, especially one who was eager to please his or her coach in order to garner perhaps more playing time, well, that kid is going to feel pressured to go out after the game is over and to join in the prayer session. Now, look, in effect, the case about the religion, I understand the focus on this case, but the real world impact is on the kids. And I honestly don't have an issue if a coach wants to go to a private spot after a game or go off by him or herself and say some prayers. Of course, that's fine. Freedom of religion. But the difference in this case is that this high school coach, well, first of all, the high school had asked him at one point, would you mind going into a private room and doing your prayers there? He didn't want to do that. No, he said, no, I'm going to go out after the game, take a knee in the middle of the field. Now, again, I don't think there's anything inherently wrong with attending a prayer session. But on the other hand, in a public school setting where the students come from all different backgrounds and all different cultures and all different religions, is it right to expect a teenager then to join in with the coach? After all, look, the teenager, the athlete, may not care a whit about the coach's religion, but consider the psychological dynamics that are working here. Who wants to be a kid on a high school team who doesn't join in an activity that is clearly important to the coach? After all, no athlete ever wants to disappoint their coach. I mean, high school athletes are all about trying to win approval, from the coaching staff. And not only are teenagers on teams taught to follow the rules and be a good teammate, but they're always especially eager to show the coaches that they are, quote-unquote, a team player. And so for the typical high school athlete, that means basically staying in line, doing what the coach says, and following a certain expected kind of behavior. That's what we're talking about here. So clearly these kids on his teams, you saw the coach going out and taking a knee and going through a prayer session. And the kids' parents are the ones who spoke up and said, we're a little concerned. This is sending a message to our kids that if they want to continue to, garner playing time, gain the approval of the coach, they need to go out there and take a knee as well. And that is why the parents began to complain to the school board about this coach's behavior. It had nothing to do with the coach and his freedom of religion. They were more concerned about the impact this was having on the kids, their kids. So if you're a high school coach, you always have to be thinking ahead of what you say and what you do. I mean, that's obvious. It's because your athletes, your student athletes, are looking to you for approval. That, of course, is pretty much common sense. And it was very much in effect long before this lawsuit was filed out in Washington State by this assistant high school football coach, who felt his freedom of religious expression was being infringed. And now, again, the Supreme Court has ruled the coach was wrongfully terminated from his coaching job, and so he can now return to school to coach again and conduct his religious prayer sessions on the field after each game. But again, you have to think about this. You have to be careful if you're a coach about the issue of religion and how your athletes respond to you. Kids are always going to wonder whether they're expected to be involved in a post-game get-together or post-game prayer session. Even if you tell them as the coach and make it clear that that prayer session is totally voluntary, it's totally optional, well, kids are kids. They're going to feel a bit of social pressure that they really ought to be out there and pray with you. I don't know. I still think in this day and age, coaches have to be especially careful when it comes to cultural sensitivity and religion. You got to be real careful when it comes to the influence you have on your athletes. That's what, coaches do have a huge influence on their players. Thinking about this case and religion, it wasn't that long ago we were talking about that case from Ohio where the high school football coach disciplined one of his top players who happened to miss a weightlifting session. The coach forced the kid to eat a pepperoni pizza even though the kid was Jewish and kept a kosher kitchen. Now, the coach in this case and his staff, they all knew that kid, the football player, didn't eat pork. And yet they still made him eat the pepperoni pizza in the gym, surrounded by all of his teammates, so they could all witness this. Now, in that case, the head football coach lost his job for this kind of unusual punishment. He was fired. But that isn't the end of the story. In that case, the football player and his family filed a $12 million lawsuit against the school district for, obviously, what this coach did to him. And I got to tell you, I'm not a lawyer, but I would think that that family and that kid have a pretty good case against his coach and the school district. There was simply no reason for this kind of insensitive and outrageous behavior by the coaching staff. So, again, coaches, in these litigious times, you always need to really think twice about what you do and what you say, because you know kids are paying attention all the time. Okay, let's talk about these issues or anything else you want to talk about. 877-337-6666 is our number, of course. When I come back from the commercial break, I'll go right to your calls.
So it's a new year, 2025, and you're thinking, how am I going to make this year different? How am I going to build something for myself? But where do I start? Shopify is how you're going to make it happen, and here's how. Shopify makes it simple to create your brand, open for business, and get your first sale. The best time to start your new business is right now. Get your store up and running easily with thousands of customizable templates, no coding or design skills required. All you need to do is drag and drop. Their powerful social media tools let you connect all your channels and create shoppable posts and help you sell everywhere people scroll. What happens if you don't act now? Will you regret it? What if someone beats you to the idea? Don't kick yourself when you hear this again in a year because you didn't do anything now. With Shopify, your first sale is closer than you think. Sign up for your $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/odysseypodcast, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/odysseypodcast to start selling with Shopify today. shopify.com/odysseypodcast.
That's right, friends. It's the 4th of July. Can't do better the 4th of July than some John Philip Sousa. That's just that's a great, great way to think about our great country and the 4th of July. Okay, we're talking this morning about the latest headlines and controversies that are affecting the world of youth and amateur sports. And, I want to take your thoughts and comments, everything from what's happening with NIL, obviously, to religious, the Supreme Court decision allowing the high school football coach to continue his prayer sessions after public high school football games. Let's start our conversation this morning with Ed Ward over in Elizabeth, New Jersey. Ed, good morning. You're first up on the fan.
Good morning, Rick. Happy 4th of July.
Yes, sir. You too.
This NIL thing is really getting out of control, and I really think it's going to stay in forever, it looks like.
Oh, yeah. It's not going away now. It's here.
No. Well, I'm going to tell you a story. The reason why I haven't called the past couple weeks, I've been running my team showcases, and I coach a travel team, so we've been in events the past few weekends.
Mm-hmm.
And I do a Q&A with the parents at my showcase, and one of the parents asked, are any of these schools – Division I schools attending this event, are they part of the NIL program? I said, that I don't know. You can ask them after the event and all that. So, and these weren't high-level D1 schools. They were your low-level, mid-level D1 schools that attended my event.
Mm-hmm.
So what I think they got to do with the NIL, Rick, is the schools that have it, which predominates the Power 5, let them have their own league, let them have their own College World Series, let them have their own playoff NCAA tournament. Then you got the other Division I, let them have their own tournaments, on that level. Because twos and threes aren't going to have NILs. I think that the way the world's coming to now, you got to do that. And it's funny. My nephew's a college baseball coach. He's at a mid-level school. He's already been asked that, trying to recruit players in the 2023 class.
Of course. Ed, it's honestly, if the way this is sort of unfolding, if your kid is looking to go play college sports, in your case, obviously, it's baseball, but it could be any sport in college, and it could be any level, Division I, II, or III, clearly, you have nothing to lose if you're being recruited to say to the recruiting coach, what about NIL? What does your school have to offer to me in addition to whatever scholarship money you can offer? What about NIL? And if the coach says, we don't have an NIL program, or that's out of our league, or whatever. I mean, the kid's going to say, well, I'm talking to other schools who do have NIL money to hand it out to their athletes. So it's really going to just change everything. And again, it doesn't hurt the kid to ask that, because every other kid in the country or their parents are asking about that as well. It's really something that's going to have to be corralled. I don't think the NCAA is going to be strong enough or have enough manpower to look over all this and enforce it. And quite frankly, as we know, with conferences like the Power Five, like the Big Ten, getting even bigger and stronger in the SEC, it's just going to continue. And it's going to continue at the mid-majors as well.
Oh, I know. And then you're talking about the conferences now. It's no more like conference by region. It's like who can get the best teams anywhere to participate. I mean, for USC, UCLA to come into the Big Ten, I mean, it makes that conference powerful, but what does it do to the Pac-12? It makes it look really weak now.
Well, the Pac-12, I think either they're going to first probably try and go out and pick up some other teams to see if they can entice them to join the vacancies that the UCLA and USC left. Or if they can't do that, then you'll see the Pac-12 teams, they'll bolt and they'll try to join some other conferences. But, again, we know at the highest levels like the Pac-12 or the SEC or the Big Ten, you know, these kids are the top recruits. But to your point, going through these showcases that you've been running and organizing, the parents are asking, the colleges that may not be in the Big Ten or in the SEC or the ACC, or whatever, and they're asking about NIL money as well. I just think if you are a coach today, you have to be prepared to have a really good answer when a kid or their parents ask about, well, why should I go to your school and what can you help me with in terms of having NIL money? I think that's where we are now. I don't think that's going to change. I think it's just going to get more and more prominent. Ed, thank you. I got to get some more calls. Thanks as always for the call. I appreciate it. Let me move on. Let's go to Rob Freed out in Lake Success. Rob, good morning. You're next up on the phone.
Hey, good morning, Rick. Listen, I'm in the middle of my racing season, so I'm catching you on tape. And last week was a great show. And I want to just contribute before I get to today's topics on.
Yeah.
An article, and I sent it over to you, one of my colleagues over in St. Louis must be listening to your show, because we don't talk much in medicine on the medicine aspect of specialization. I mean, just because I'm a doctor, I don't like to bring it up too much on the medical aspects.
Yep.
But one of my colleagues wrote an article that he's seen out in St. Louis, a lot of parents bringing kids in. He's an ex-tennis player. He played Division I tennis in his day, and he's played at a very, very young age in was specializing in tennis at that early age, because a lot of them tennis players peak at a very early age. And you were talking about the ice skaters last week,
right?
Along those lines, and a lot of those individual sports have to start at a very early age, swimming as well. But he's saying he's seeing now exactly what we're talking about: kids coming in with all types of foot related injuries from overuse. They're specializing only in one sport. Nothing new here. I'm just adding on. He's just seeing it. He's seeing injuries. He's having to do surgeries now. And he's just confirming everything that we're saying, you know, what we've talked about week after week after week. And the parents, they don't get it. The best athletes, as we've been saying along, Rick, always are the ones to participate, hand-eye coordination, all different sports. Those are the ones that wind up making it to the top levels, because you need to specialize and get all those skills.
I remember you did send me that article and was spot on. It just basically reinforced what we've been saying for years here on the show, and that is that specialization at an early age, you understand, mom and dad, you're sort of setting your kid up not to be in the fast track, but you're sort of setting them up for a greater potential for injuries, for burnout. The parents don't see it that way. They say, no. If I have my kid playing this sport 24/7, 365, then that's going to get them to a higher level. No, it doesn't work that way. It doesn't.
100%.
We can't seem to get the rest of the population to understand that.
Now, I want to just talk about today's topic. Number one, this monologue just brought up, this whole thing with the Supreme Court, and I never get political, and I don't want to talk about my political views, because you'd probably be surprised where I'm at, but in some ways, but this is getting out of control with the Supreme Court. I mean, I've never heard so many cases. I know they sit in all year long. This case is very disturbing to me with this coach. Number one, everything you brought up, church and state, religion should be separate in the public schools. You want to be in a private school situation, no issues. Kids go to private schools, they go to religious schools, and that's where they're taught religion. But when it becomes a public school situation, I think it's a little out of line, and everything you hit on with the kids and the feeling peer pressure, no good. It's sad that it had to get to that it actually made it to the Supreme Court. It's unbelievable to me,
I think you nailed it perfectly. And Rob, let me take some other calls. So thank you as always for your comments. You know, the fact is, of course, we do have parochial schools in this country, and nobody's, as Rob just said, nobody has a problem if your kid goes to a parochial school and there's going to be prayer sessions either on the field, in class. That's what you want. That's what you signed up for. That's why you send your kid there. A little different in the public school. And nobody's debating or trying to take away this coach's right to his freedom of speech, freedom of religion. We get all that. I've just, as I said before, my concern is, and this is what the parents were complaining about, like, my kid feels obligated now to go up to midfield and sit there after a game and listen to this guy pray, because the kid feels... Kid Pepper doesn't care what the coach is praying about. The kid's concerned that if I don't make a showing there, if I just go to the locker room after the game, the coach is going to pay attention to that, and it may hurt me in terms of my playing time or any other situation with the team. So that's, to me, that's the real-world impact on this, and I think that's – Supreme Court obviously doesn't care about that. They're looking at this through the prism, obviously, of just the of the so-called constitutional right of religion and precedent and stare decisis and all those legal terms. But the fact is, this is how these parents and their kids are looking at the situation. Let's move on. Let's go to Ralph over in Manhattan. Hey, Ralph. Good morning. You're next up on the fan.
Rick, the knee-jerk reaction when it comes to prayer is to say essentially that you can do whatever you want. A coach should have those players midfield go about their business unscathed. But I'll tell you something, Rick. It ostracizes some that aren't from that ilk or perhaps from another persuasion. They can't take part, and maybe their playing time may be affected. Maybe they're not seen in good favor as the others would be that are actually engaging in that prayer. This is something that the Supreme Court neglected. I think that the coach, asked to go to a private area, just the fact that he denied that right of his to go to the private area, no, I want to go in the center of the field and make a showcase out of the whole thing, he's wrong in this matter. And the Supreme Court, if I may, was wrong also in their ruling.
Yeah, it's again... and we do want to stay away as much as we can from the whole idea of politics here, because that's a whole different topic unto itself. But in this particular case, and the Supreme Court, obviously it has majority of conservative justices, but again, and they'll tell you that, oh no, we're just looking at the facts in the case and we're looking at it through the light of the Constitution and so on and so forth. Yeah, but the fact of the matter is, this affects real people, real lives, and those parents out in Washington State have to explain to their kids, well, the coach, when Coach Kennedy comes back to coaching the football team again, and he has his prayer sessions, I guess you probably should go out there because you don't want to be one of the few on the team who don't show up. I mean, that's the reality of this, and that's hard.
Well, there's a reason, Rick, why a parent sends their child to a public school to escape these kind of things. You think for 1 minute these players aren't put on the spot when they don't participate? You know, what's wrong with you? You're not a part of us. You know, get over here, eat that pepperoni pizza, so on and so forth. This goes on. Now, that whole pepperoni pizza thing. But this kid is going to, and the family's going to clean up. They're going to make so much money on that suit. You know, you're gonna say, "Well, my goodness, if this ever happens again, you know, you got to be kidding, because these parents and that kid are going to make big on that one. But, you know, Rick, I'll tell you, as far as this goes, this is what a public school should be all about, just freedom not to engage in religious activities. But, of course, you know, Supreme Court has other ideas on the matter, I suppose.
Well, yeah, and as I said, it's you wonder what will be the ultimate blowback on this. But I do, from the accounts I've read, this coach, Coach Kennedy, is very eager to go back to coaching again and very eager to resume with his prayers at midfield. And again, you know, and Ralph, thank you for your call this morning. And again, friends, I'm not trying to say that this coach should be stopped from exercising his right to pray. No, that's not the point we're talking about here. That's not the point. Of course he's allowed to say prayers if he feels so compelled after a high school football game. But the question is, if he goes to midfield, there's going to be this sort of like understood sense of expectation of pressure that's applied to the kids who feel like, well, I guess I should go out there, because if I don't go out there with the coach, he's going to be aware of the fact that I didn't show up for his prayer session. And apparently, the coach did this for a number of years, and after a while, the prayer sessions at first were very small, but they began to grow in great numbers to the point where he had not only just the football players out there, but there were a lot of spectators came out as well. There was media coverage. It was sort of like, this is like more of a circus than a chance just to sit to take a knee and reflect. But again, the coaches, the parents were concerned about, you know, do my kids have to do this? It's as simple as that. Let's take some more calls here at 877-337-6666. Let's go to Mary out in Long Island. Mary, good morning. You're on the fan.
Good morning. I'm a mom. I'm a teacher.
Mm-hmm.
And I teach in a public school. Now, I have a few questions regarding this particular case. Were any kids ever benched for not joining in this prayer session with the coach? Do we know that?
That's a good question, Mary. I do not know that, but I will tell you that the parents are the ones, as I mentioned, they're the ones. It wasn't just one parent. It was a lot of moms and dads who went to the school board and said, our kids feel that they are expected to attend or participate in the after game prayer session because they're afraid that if they don't, it'll be held against them. So again, to answer your question directly, I don't have that evidence, but that was the vibe that the parents were getting from their kids.
All right. Well, are these high school kids?
Yes.
Okay, and they felt pressured. If this gentleman comes back to a school or the school that he was let go from, perhaps it would be welcoming to have a meeting between these parents and him. I just feel if he's pressuring people to do this, that's one thing. But don't parents have a right to also get involved and talk to their children themselves? How do you feel about this? How do your teammates feel about this? Do you feel you have to participate, or do you want to participate? These are things that aren't being brought out, and I really resent that.
Well, Mary, let me ask you this. I mean, you say you're a teacher and mm-hmm. a mom. Mm-hmm. Suppose at the end of a class, you basically went to the front of the classroom and said to your class, well, we've had a very good session today. I'm going to have a little prayer session here at the front. If anybody would like to join in with me, you're more than welcome. You don't
but
think...
I wouldn't do that.
Well, no, you said you wouldn't do that.
I think your average teacher would not do that, okay?
But I'm saying, what's the difference between a teacher and a coach in this situation? I mean, the coach, if you did that, I realize you're not going to do it, but if a teacher did that and said, in a public school setting, let's have a little prayer session, and all of a sudden, every kid in the classroom is going to say, I better show up, I better get out of my chair and go pray with the teacher, because if I don't, you know, he or she is going to hold it against me. Well, it's the same thing here with the coach. And that's why it's sort of jarring as to, you know, how this thing ought to have played out.
But did he say to them, I'm going to go pray on the sidelines. You want to join me? He didn't ask them, do you want to join me? Did he? Or did I miss that part?
No, he did not. But he's an assistant coach. And obviously, as a game ends and the teams are beginning to pack up and head to the locker room and the fans are beginning to leave the stands, he went out to the middle of the field, which is obviously at that point vacant, got down on a knee, and began. People said, "What is he doing?" Well, he was praying. And all of a sudden, some of the kids came out, and all of a sudden, it became sort of like this over the course of several weeks and lasted for several years. It became more and more of a spectacle. So that was the concern. He didn't say to the kids necessarily that, "Hey, come out and pray with me." No, he didn't do that. But his actions pretty much bespoke what he was doing, and that's the concern.
But then the parents have a responsibility to speak to their children about that issue, just as they have a responsibility to speak to their children about any issue, religious or not, that makes their kid uncomfortable, correct?
Yeah, but why would the parents have to do that? Why is the coach doing that? And why, as opposed to the parents have to have the responsibility to say, you don't have to do that. I mean, the school board, this went on for several years, the school board at one point went to the coach and said, look, we're getting a lot of complaints. Would you mind just going off to by yourself? Would you go into the locker room? Would you go into a private classroom? If you want to pray, we're not trying to deny you a chance or opportunity to pray, but you're having an impact on other people's lives, and that's a concern. And that's why this thing ended up in court. So.
And these parents of these children are having an effect on this man's life. I mean, you said, why don't you just go in the locker room? Well, aren't the kids in the locker room there too?
They can go. But my point is that they didn't want them. They asked the coach politely, professionally, look, rather than do this at the middle of the football field, can you go off someplace else? I think they said to him at one point, can you go off into a private classroom where there aren't any kids there, or it's away from the everybody's viewing area? And he said, no, I'm not going to do that.
And so, what was his reason for refusing that? Do we know that?
Yeah, he said, I have a right, a freedom of religion in this country, and you can't shuttle me off into a private classroom. So,
well, he does.
Yeah, but
people better get used to it, because what they're teaching 4, 5, and 6-year-olds in school now, God help us. Is anybody upset about that? Nothing to do with religion. So once again, religion is getting a bad rap.
No, I don't think that's. I don't. And again, Mary, let me stop you there, because I got to take a break. And I hear you, but thank you for your thoughts this morning. Don't think religion is getting a bad rap. That's what I was trying to say all along. It's not a question of whether or not this guy has a right to pray. Of course he does. We all say that. We all agree with that. The question is, by his going out and taking a knee at midfield after a game, this is now having the result, a ripple effect of having an influence on the kids. And that's the concern here. And I gave Mary the hypothetical about, you know, if you're a class teacher, and she is, and at the end of a class, she said, "Okay, kids, come up here. I'm gonna go up here and pray for a few minutes. If anybody wants to join me," or they see her pray, kids are going to come up and say, "Well, I guess I should go up there because I want to make sure I get a decent mark in this class." That's the interpretation of the kids who went back to their parents and said, "We're not sure what we should do here, but I don't want to be left out. I don't want the coach to think I'm not a team player." That's what we're talking about. All right, let me take a timeout. Interesting stuff on this, and I'm glad you're calling in. 877-337-6666. Hey, you gotta love it, man. It's the 4th of July. You gotta love John Philip Sousa. Great stuff. Okay, just a quick reminder that you can always find me at AskCoachWolf.com. That's my website. And, of course, you can follow me on Twitter at AskCoachWolf. We're talking right now about the issue about high school football coach and religion, whether he should be allowed to pray at midfield after a game is over. Supreme Court, United States, said yes, he can. And we're also talking about the ongoing concerns that a lot of fans have about NIL, and the fact that now we're seeing more and more of high school recruits, college recruits, and now asking point blank, what about, how much money am I getting from NIL? And if you're a college coach, you better have some pretty good answers for that kid. You just can't say, well, you know, we're not Ohio State, or we're not Michigan. We're a smaller program. Yeah, but the kids want to know, what are you doing for me so I can make some extra bucks if I come and play for you at your college? These are real concerns. 877-337-6666. And again, I just want to reiterate on the religion aspect. Again, I have no issue at all with this coach wanting to pray. That's fine. He's entitled to do that. And in this school district out in Washington State, the school board went to him on several occasions and said, look, we're getting some pushback from the parents because they feel that their kids feel a sense of obligation to go out and take a knee and pray with you. They just don't know if that's something that you should be influencing the kids in that way, because all these kids have different backgrounds, different religions. But the school board said to the coach, can't you do this off in some sort of private manner? We're not trying to dissuade you from praying, not at all. But it's becoming something of a public spectacle, and it's having a ripple effect on these kids. All right, let's go back to our calls. Let's go to Jack Smithland over in Fairlawn. Jack, good morning. I'm eager to get your thoughts about this case out of Washington State. Tell me what you think.
Well, Rick, you know, first of all, like you said, I respect people for their freedom to pray and actually act as they wish. But, you know, in this case, kids were affected by it. And no matter what, I mean, Mary stated that, did the coach ever say that it would affect them? Well, no coach would ever say that, but they do react that way.
Mm-hmm.
They do feel that if kids do not chime in and follow the rule of team, then there will be punishments, and it might be punishments that they never come out and admit. But in this situation, you know, I read a lot of articles about this last night, and the funny thing about it is, Rick, is that I'm going to read a quote, and don't quote me on it as far as it being from the AP, Associated Press, but it says the ruling does not state that teachers and coaches have the right to conduct prayer during class or extracurricular activities. It says that a teacher and a coach can pray in a quiet and isolated manner. Now, here's the situation. Those six justices that decided that this guy could do that said he had no responsibilities at the end of the game, so therefore he was allowed to go in the middle of the field and pray. And here's what happened. On that last game that caused all the conflict, it was a homecoming game that was very publicized. He's been doing it. There was paper articles and newspaper articles and radio conversation about it. So at the end of the game, people stormed the field to get into the middle of the field to pray with this coach. People were hurt. Band members were knocked over and injured. One or two people, I believe, had to go to the hospital. And he made this, like you said, a spectacle. He made it a situation that it wasn't about everybody else. It was about him and what he was doing. So the court decided, those six judges decided that he did it in a manner that was private because he made it private to himself. That's completely outrageous. And in my opinion, and this is my opinion, I think our Supreme Court is making some bad judgments lately. They're not thinking before they act.
I hear you. And again, let's just focus on this case in particular, and the fact that you and I'm glad you mentioned about the fallout, because this did become a spectacle with this coach.
Yep.
And again, he was basically terminated from his coaching job a few years ago, and this case began to wind its way up through the various lower courts and got finally to the Supreme Court, but he was doing this for a number of years, to the point where I remember one of the accounts I had read, Jack, was that an opposing coach came to him and said, gee, it's amazing that you're allowed to have this kind of prayer session after a game. How does your school allow this to happen? And so, I mean, clearly, if this coach knew that, as you said, in the last game of the year, there was going to be this big sort of outpouring of people who want to rush the field and there's people getting knocked over and so on and so forth. Coach, if the whole idea is about prayer, wouldn't you think it'd be more sense just to say, you know, I'm not going to do this. I'm just going to go into a private, isolated area so nobody, there isn't this kind of unbelievable outburst of fanfare. I mean, it doesn't make any sense.
What's outrageous about this, Rick, what's outrageous about this is that the six justices thought that was in a private, quiet situation, but the other three decided it wasn't. But here's something else that comes to effect, and you said it, and I know your main concern, and it's my main concern too, is that kids are affected by this.
Of course.
And kids feel obligated to follow coaches' rule and everything like that. And plus, you know, separation of state and church goes back into the 1700s. Thomas Jefferson wrote a letter to a Baptist church about the wall of separation between church and state. And it was misinterpreted what he wrote, but what during this time that this coach was doing this, there were rules that church was not allowed to be brought into public settings and public schools. But he did it anyway, and he continued to do it. So you know what? With acts that we do out of our control that break rules, there are consequences to the rule. Now, one other thing that one of the articles stated is the school does not, they're not being forced to hire this gentleman back. You know, they don't have to hire him back. They really don't. I mean, will they?
That may be true. I thought I read that he couldn't wait to get back to coaching there again.
He said that, but at the point in two of the articles, it said that they let him go because he broke rules during his tenure, during the time that he was at school.
Yeah.
And that's why he was released, because he didn't abide by what they said. You know, I respect him for his thoughts. I respect him for wanting to pray, but not at the expense of kids and rules, of breaking rules. What's he teaching his kids? He's breaking a rule. Now, maybe the rule isn't in effect anymore because our Supreme Court decided, you know, this is the way we want it, and I don't care about anybody else. But you know what? There are consequences, and
that's the thing, Jack. I think that's the bottom line. There are consequences, and again, if you would think, if this is a gentleman who really wants to have a positive influence on his student athletes, he would have come to the reality that, or realization that, you know, my religion is very important to me, and I feel a great compulsion to go out and pray at the conclusion of a game. But he had to be aware of the fact that this is becoming more of a circus event and putting unbelievable pressure on these kids. You know, why can't you just go off in a private setting, in a private room, into an isolated area? You can pray all you want, but you're not going to have an impact that you've had here with these kids. I don't know why he hasn't been able to answer that question. All he says is, no, I have a right to pray, and I can pray in public. Well, yeah, but that's true, but not when you're having a public setting in a school like this. Jack, well said, my friend. Let me take some more calls here. Thank you, as always, for your deep insights. Let me move on to Pete in Westchester County. Hey, Pete, good morning. You're on the fan.
Hey, Rick, how you doing? Wow, I get to follow Jack Smith. That's an honor, Rick.
Well, Jack Smithlin is, you know, he's a regular contributor, and he, as you heard, Pete, he's got some good thoughts, and he gets some pretty good,
he certainly does. He actually made me write down some stuff here, but I really don't have a problem with what the coach is doing, and you've been talking about all morning how, and Jack even brought it up, that, you know, he's making a spectacle. He didn't make a spectacle. He went out, he took a knee, he prayed. He asked kids if they wanted to. Now, these are high school kids. These aren't elementary school kids, so they can think for themselves.
Yep.
It was the parents. It was the parents that got involved. The parents ruined everything. They're the ones who got involved, and they made it a spectacle. They brought in the board. They brought in the newspapers. We would not know of this if it wasn't for the newspaper. So they're the ones making a spectacle of this. Now, what's he doing? He's taking a knee. Sounds familiar. Nobody was complaining when kids were taking a knee. Colleges.
Hey, you gotta love it, man. It's the 4th of July. You gotta love John Philip Sousa. Great stuff. Okay, just a quick reminder that you can always find me at AskCoachWolf.com. That's my website. And, of course, you can follow me on Twitter at AskCoachWolf. We're talking right now about the issue about high school football coach and religion, whether he should be allowed to pray at midfield after a game is over. Supreme Court, United States, said yes, he can. And we're also talking about the ongoing concerns that a lot of fans have about NIL and the fact that now we're seeing more and more of high school recruits, college recruits, and now asking point blank, what about? How much money am I getting from NIL? And if you're a college coach, you better have some pretty good answers for that kid. You just can't say, well, you know, we're not Ohio State or we're not Michigan. We're a smaller program. Yeah, but the kids want to know, what are you doing for me so I can make some extra bucks if I come and play for you at your college? These are real concerns. 877-337-6666. And again, I just want to reiterate on the religion aspect. Again, I have no issue at all with this coach wanting to pray. That's fine. He's entitled to do that. And in this school district out in Washington State, the school board went to him on several occasions and said, look, we're getting some pushback from the parents because they feel that their kids feel a sense of obligation to go out and take a knee and pray with you. They just don't know if that's something that you should be influencing the kids in that way, because all these kids have different backgrounds, different religions. But the school board said to the coach, can't you do this off in some sort of private manner? We're not trying to dissuade you from praying, not at all. But it's becoming something of a public spectacle, and it's having a ripple effect on these kids. All right, let's go back to our calls. Let's go to Jack Smithland over in Fairlawn. Jack, good morning. I'm eager to get your thoughts about this case out of Washington State. Tell me what you think.
Well, Rick, you know, first of all, like you said, I respect people for their freedom to pray and actually act as they wish. But, you know, in this case, kids were affected by it. And no matter what, I mean, Mary stated that, did the coach ever say that it would affect them? Well, no coach would ever say that, but they do react that way. Mm-hmm. They do feel that if kids do not chime in and follow the rule of team, then there will be punishments, and it might be punishments that they never come out and admit. But in this situation, you know, I read a lot of articles about this last night, and the funny thing about it is, Rick, is that I'm going to read a quote, and don't quote me on it as far as it being from the AP, Associated Press, but it says the ruling does not state that teachers and coaches have the right to conduct prayer during class or extracurricular activities. It says that a teacher and a coach can pray in a quiet and isolated manner. Now, here's the situation. Those six justices that decided that this guy could do that said he had no responsibilities at the end of the game, so therefore he was allowed to go in the middle of the field and pray. And here's what happened. On that last game that caused all the conflict, it was a homecoming game that was very publicized. He's been doing it. There was paper articles and newspaper articles and radio conversation about it. So at the end of the game, people stormed the field to get into the middle of the field to pray with this coach. People were hurt. Band members were knocked over and injured. One or two people, I believe, had to go to the hospital. And he made this, like you said, a spectacle. He made it a situation that it wasn't about everybody else. It was about him and what he was doing. So the court decided, those six judges decided that he did it in a manner that was private because he made it private to himself. That's completely outrageous. And in my opinion, and this is my opinion, I think our Supreme Court is making some bad judgments lately. They're not thinking before they act.
I hear you. And again, let's just focus on this case in particular, and the fact that you and I'm glad you mentioned about the fallout, because this did become a spectacle with this coach. Yep. And again, he was basically terminated from his coaching job a few years ago, and this case began to wind its way up through the various lower courts and got finally to the Supreme Court. But he was doing this for a number of years to the point where I remember one of the accounts I had read, Jack, was that an opposing coach came to him and said, gee, it's amazing that you're allowed to have this kind of prayer session after a game. How does your school allow this to happen? And so, I mean, clearly, if this coach knew that, as you said, in the last game of the year, there was going to be this big sort of outpouring of people who want to rush the field and there was people getting knocked over and so on and so forth. Coach, if the whole idea is about prayer, wouldn't you think it'd be more sense just to say, you know, I'm not going to do this. I'm just going to go into a private, isolated area so nobody, there isn't this kind of unbelievable outburst of fanfare. I mean, it doesn't make any sense.
What's outrageous about this, Rick, what's outrageous about this is that the six justices thought that was in a private, quiet situation, but the other three decided it wasn't. But here's something else that comes to effect, and you said it, and I know your main concern, and it's my main concern too, is that kids are affected by this.
Of course.
And kids feel obligated to follow coaches' rule and everything like that. And plus, you know, separation of state and church goes back into the 1700s. Thomas Jefferson wrote a letter to a Baptist church about the wall of separation between church and state. And it was misinterpreted what he wrote, but what during this time that this coach was doing this, there were rules that church was not allowed to be brought into public settings and public schools. But he did it anyway, and he continued to do it. So you know what? With acts that we do out of our control that break rules, there are consequences to the rule. Now, one other thing that one of the articles stated is the school they're not being forced to hire this gentleman back. You know, they don't have to hire him back. They really don't. I mean, will they?
That may be true. I thought I read that he couldn't wait to get back to coaching there again.
I don't know if he did. Yeah, he said that. But at the point in two of the articles, it said that they let him go because he broke rules during his tenure, during the time that he was at school.
Yeah.
And that's why he was released, because he didn't abide by what they said. You know, I respect him for his thoughts. I respect him for wanting to pray, but not at the expense of kids and rules, of breaking rules. What's he teaching his kids? He's breaking a rule. Now, maybe the rule isn't in effect anymore because our Supreme Court decided, you know, this is the way we want it, and I don't care about anybody else. But you know what? There are consequences.
That's the thing, Jack. I think that's the bottom line. There are consequences. And again, if you would think, if this is a gentleman who really wants to have a positive influence on his student athletes, he would have come to the reality that, or realization that, you know, my religion is very important to me, and I feel a great compulsion to go out and pray at the conclusion of a game. But he had to be aware of the fact that this is becoming more of a circus event and putting unbelievable pressure on these kids. You know, why can't you just go off in a private setting, in a private room, into an isolated area? You can pray all you want, but you're not going to have an impact that you've had here with these kids. I don't know why he hasn't been able to answer that question. All he says is, no, I have a right to pray, and I can pray in public. Well, yeah, but that's true, but not when you're having a public setting in a school like this. Jack, well said, my friend. Let me take some more calls here. Thank you, as always, for your deep insights. Let me move on to Pete in Westchester County. Hey, Pete, good morning. You're on the fan.
Hey, Rick, how you doing? Wow, I get to follow Jack Smith. That's an honor, Rick.
Well, Jack Smithlin is, you know, he's a regular contributor, and he, as you heard, Pete, he's got some good thoughts, and
he certainly does. He actually made me write down some stuff here, but I really don't have a problem with what the coach is doing, and you've been talking about all morning how, and Jack even brought it up that, you know, he's making a spectacle. He didn't make a spectacle. He went out, he took a knee, he prayed. He asked kids if they wanted to, now these are high school kids, these aren't elementary school kids, so they can think for themselves.
Yep.
It was the parents that got involved. The parents ruined everything. They're the ones who got involved, and they made it a spectacle. They brought in the board. They brought in the newspapers. We would not know this if it wasn't for the newspaper. So
So they're the ones making a spectacle of this. Now, what's he doing? He's taking a knee. Sounds familiar. Nobody was complaining when kids were taking a knee, colleges, athletes were taking a knee, you know, or sitting in the dugout during the national anthem. No one, I didn't even hear a call.
Yeah, but there's a difference here, Pete. A couple of different, and I hear what you're saying. But first of all,
the kid and state, but this is all political. This
well,
all
maybe,
political but, and it shouldn't be.
Pete, here's the deal. Yeah, and I hear what you're saying on this. The guys who were taking knees before the national anthem, those were political statements. This is different. This is prayer, and the coach might, as you said, when he first started doing this, he didn't turn to his team and say, "Hey guys, I'm going out to the 50-yard line. I'm going to take a knee and pray." He didn't do that. He went out by himself, and then all of a sudden he did this after every game. And after a while, some of the players began to say, "What's going on here? What are you doing, coach?" And he explained to them that he was praying. So some of the kids said, "Well, maybe I should do that too." And all of a sudden, he's inadvertently or deliberately, we just don't know, he put into an effect a chain reaction of expectations that maybe I should go out there because I'm a member of the team. And, you know, parents were obviously watching this saying, "What are you doing? Why are you out there with your helmet off with the coach and the knee?" He said, we're praying. Well, most parents would probably ask their kids who are teenagers and just, you know, young kids, "What are you praying about? And what is the scope?" And so on and so forth. So I think that's something where parents do have a right. Again, these are not people in their 30s or 40s. These are kids who are, you know, 16, 17 years old. I think that's the difference. And again, it's not the same as making a political statement, which is a whole different, you know, kettle of fish. This is about prayer. And that's why I think there's real concern. Hey, Pete, thank you for the call. Let's go to Brian in Glen Cove. Hey, Brian, good morning. You're next up on the fan. Okay, Brian's gone. Let's go to Louie out in Lynbrook. Hey, Lou. Good morning.
Hey, Rick. Great speaking to you. I'm calling about the Jewish kid that was ridiculed in front of the whole team by his coach.
Yes.
For his belief in the Jewish religion. I think that's outrageous what he did.
Well, I don't. I'll tell you, Lou. I actually saw some video. Apparently, this incident took place in the high school gymnasium. There was security footage, and the coaches basically had the rest of the football team sort of surround the kid in the gymnasium and watch while this kid was sitting down and was told by the coaching staff, as your punishment, you have to eat this pepperoni pizza. And the coaches knew the kid apparently was kosher, and they said, "You're going to do it, otherwise we're going to have to basically come up with some other punishments for the rest of your teammates." It was just outrageous, and you know, no question, boom. I mean, you just can't be that. You can't be that insensitive. And the coaching staff, most of it was fired. And now they're looking at the school's looking at a $12 million lawsuit. I mean, it's unbelievable.
I think he's going to win that lawsuit hands down. Number one. Number two, I think the coach is going to get fired. Number three, I think the principal is going to get fired.
Well, the coach did get fired, and that's no question.
Oh, he did? Okay.
Oh, yeah. He was fired quite some time ago.
And what I also believe is that if they have an athletic director, his head's going to roll as well, too. I just think it's totally outrageous that anybody would ridicule a kid in front of his old class, in front of his own class, for his religion. The kid was a nice kid. And it's just outrageous how they can still do this, how these people, like, they're Nazis from World War II, the way they treat people. It's got to stop.
Well, look, it's thankfully, obviously, when this came to light, the school board, the administration out there immediately investigated, found, and they had the video, which it's probably hard to dispute. And they fired the coach and I think most of the coaching staff, because somebody somewhere should have said to the coach, "Really? We're going to do this to this kid?" And it turned out the kid was one of their better players. He, since when this all happened, he just basically transferred out of that high school and went to another school. But it's just outrageous that these kind of things take place. Again, I know that coaches always feel looking for new ways, and Lou, thank you as always for the call. The coach is always looking for different ways to try to connect or to impress or to have some sort of way that they influence their athletes. And, you know, unfortunately, sometimes our coaches just don't think through what they're saying or what they're doing, and these things really can backfire. And again, the situation out in Ohio with the pepperoni pizza, that was just outrageous, outrageous. And as we've all surmised today, when that ends up going to court, I'm sure that that family and that kid are going to basically be, you know, cash in for the outrageous behavior of the coaching staff. But in the case here out of Washington State, again, I just don't understand, Coach. We know you have a right to pray. We get that. We understand that. But this is not a parochial school. This is a public school. Could you just go off someplace else in private and do this? I mean, yeah. I mean, going to the 50-yard line after a game and taking a knee, somebody somewhere is going to ask one of the players to say, why is he doing that? Is he hurt? Is he looking for something? Is he praying? Oh, if he's praying, well, we love this coach. Maybe we should go out there and pray with him. And that sends an emotion, a situation where, you know, parents start asking, why is my kid taking knee and praying with the coach? And I still understand. I fully, obviously, respect the coach for having his constitutional right to freedom of religion. But why can't you go off by yourself and pray? Why do you have to have a sort of this expectation? You may think it's inadvertent, and maybe it was, but once you realize the kids are coming out to pray with you, that's going to solve some people and say, why is this happening? And I think that's where we are today in terms of the concerns with all this. Again, Supreme Court, the way they decide these cases usually, and I understand it's full of politics, I get that, I understand that, but you would think that somebody, the justices on the side that wrote the majority opinion would sort of say, you know, why did this coach do this? What did they understand that as a coach, as an educator, he's going to have an influence on these kids, and as simple as that. I don't get that. And again, I think in this day and age, and we know this, we live in very litigious times. Coaches, it's hard as anything these days to be a coach, because you got to not only just go out and work with the youngsters and try to come up with evaluation of talent, who's going to be your starting lineup, what's your game strategy, and so on and so forth. But in addition to all that, you got to be basically aware of the things you say, the things you do. And sometimes coaches, you know, sometimes they can say things that are snarky. They can say things that are politically incorrect. They can say things that honestly can come back to backfire on them and really put the entire program in total disarray. And that's a real concern. Okay, that's going to do it for me in this edition of the Sports Edge. Really great conversation this morning. I thank you all. And, of course, my thanks this morning to Connor Green. The Moose is up next here on The Fan. Friends, have a happy and safe 4th of July. I'll see you next Sunday right here on the Sports Edge.